Yeah, get us a bit.
Hi, my name's Michael Earl, and I'm a female compulsive overeater. I'm so sorry. I've been in OA for 21 years, and in those 21 years, I have been fat, I have been obese, I've been anorexic, I've been bulimic. I have just been everything that you can that revolves around food. I've been bulimic with exercise, and but I can't tell you in that 21 years, mostly I've been in recovery and at a normal size and pretty happy, joyous, and free. But the one thing that is the hardest thing I've ever dealt with is the food. It's just not, most of you know that I'm also an alcoholic. I'm in AA. I was in AA for 6 months when I finally came to OA. The alcohol, you know, once you're ready to give it up, God can just get in there and remove it. But that isn't the fact with food. You know, you have to eat. You have to eat three times a day. You have to let that tiger out of the cage three times a day. And for some of us, you have to do it a little more. And there's a lot that goes around. I've done a lot of studies lately. Right now, this is very humbling experience for me to even be up here. I didn't want to do it because I've had a weight gain due to a lot of complications. I've had several surgeries, like 8 surgeries in the last few years. On medications, I don't know if you know what steroids are here. Medications that they've had to give me to take care of some of my physical problems. A lot of medications that cause you to gain weight. And plus, being on pain medication and things like that right after surgery where you don't care if you're fat, thin, or what, you know. And it just really did hurt my recovery in this program. So I just get that out of the way. That's why I didn't want to do this here. But the one thing I do have is I do have a lot of experience. I have a lot of experience on what to do, what not to do. I have experience when OA was fabulous and flourishing and some of the things that happened to OA and why it's dwindled down. It's so neat to see this meeting the size that it is, especially on such late notice. I mean, it's just like, gosh. I guess I'll tell you a little bit first about my family. I feel like a lot of my compulsive overeating comes genetically through my family. My family's obese. My mother had an intestinal bypass for her obesity, and that contributed later on to her death. My brother was discharged from the military after 12 years because of his obesity. They would keep threatening to kick him out if he didn't lose weight, so he'd lose it. Then he'd gain it right back. They threatened to kick him out, he'd lose it, he'd gain it right back. So they finally kicked him out of the military because of his obesity. And that's very humiliating. It's respectable if you're kicked out for drinking, but it's not respectable if you're kicked out for eating, especially for a man, you know. And so, but anyway, and my daughter is very, very obese. And I might start crying when I talk about her because, my daughter lost all of her weight in OA when she was very, very young. And she was very thin and very beautiful when she was kidnapped. Brutally raped and almost murdered. And she turned her back on AA and she turned her back on OA. And her feeling was, she's thin now and look what happened. You know, and it's taken a lot of work to get her out of that kind of mindset. You know, a lot of therapy, and it's just been difficult. You know, it's been difficult, and she almost died this year because of her obesity. And people don't think this disease is as serious as alcoholism, and it is. This is a killer disease. I have anorexic friends that have died over this disease. I've had anorexic sponsorees commit suicide because of this disease. I've had a friend, a male friend, die from this disease, from sleep apnea and not being able to breathe during his sleep. My mom, many people who have had surgeries because of this disease and have died. This is a killer disease. It's every bit as much as serious as alcoholism. Probably the difference with this disease is you're not as likely to kill somebody else with it, like somebody who's drinking and driving a car and all the innocent people out there. However, I have almost hit cars by eating while I was driving. I don't know if any of you can relate to that, but I could be compulsively shoving food in my mouth and almost have a car accident. Right now my daughter is doing well for her. She has got about, I guess, going on 3 months of really clean abstinence. She's not losing the weight as fast as we'd like. She's about, I don't know if you know what pounds are. Pounds. She's about 5'2", which on me, I'm 5'6", so she comes to about here on me, and she's 350 pounds. And that's very, very big. And she has sleep apnea, where she can't breathe at night because she stops breathing because of the weight, and she was getting 49% oxygen out of 100. She's on a breathing machine now. She ended up on a walker because she couldn't hold her body up. She has some female problems due to her obesity, where she's bled for 5 years, so now she has anemia, really bad anemia. She has to have a hysterectomy. They can't do it because of her obesity. She has sugar diabetes because of her obesity. The doctor told me she's one of the sickest young ladies he's seen in a long time, and it's all because of compulsive overeating. You know, but today she's got about 3 months, going on 3 months of abstinence. She's on a breathing machine. She's ready to get off of her walker. So it looks very promising. Thank you. Because I thought she was going to die. I can give a really funny AA talk sometimes, but when it comes to OA, it's like, it's really serious stuff here. But anyway, so we both go to OA in Evans, Georgia, and it's a wonderful program there, but it's very small. It's probably like some of your meetings are here. But what I'd like to do is just tell you a little bit about how OA was when I first got to Overeaters Anonymous. It was huge. I mean, my meeting, my home group had about 150 people. It was a speaker meeting. People laughed. They enjoyed their recovery. Back then, they had what was called food plans, and they had 4 food plans. And, some of them were pretty nutritional, nutritious food plans. I had to pick the most drastic one because I do everything to extreme, which was the gray sheet. And back then, the gray sheet didn't allow any grains whatsoever. You could have meat, vegetables, and 1 fruit a day. And everything was weighed and measured, which is a very useful tool. So anyway, I went on this food plan, which was not healthy for me. And I lost the weight very fast. I went in, I was on it for 14 months, squeaky clean abstinence. And I lost all the weight. In fact, that's when I started going to anorexia. I got down to a normal size, and it's just, 2 pounds more. The scale became my higher power. And 2 pounds more, 2 pounds more, 2 pounds more, till I was sitting in a chair, a metal chair, and it hurt my bones. It hurt my bones. And finally, I had some old-timers just pull me aside and kind of, snap me out of it. And then I went on, I lost my abstinence about that period, and I went on a binge-purge cycle where first of all, I went into fasting. I fast for 3 days and binge, fast for 3 days and binge. Then I started purging, and I went through 5 years of just hell in and out of OA. But I never left OA. I always saw a sign that gave me a lot of hope, and that sign says that you're not a failure unless you quit trying. And so every day I knew if I just got up and I tried, I wasn't a failure. And finally, at one point, I met up with this group who just said, do the steps in OA and don't worry about getting abstinent and just start working with others. And so I did that. I did all those steps the way they had me do it. And I started working with others. And one day, I don't even know when it happened, my focus wasn't on the food. One day I realized that I was abstinent and I was of a normal weight. And I stayed like that for 12 years. And so I know this program really works. And that's why, and I don't want anyone to think, I hate to say that I've had relapses. I don't want people to think this program doesn't work, because this program does work. But it's just like it says in the AA 12 and 12 that God gave us natural instincts to survive. And one of those natural instincts is to eat. We have to eat to survive. And he cannot remove an instinct. I mean, we have to eat to survive. And so those of us who have this disease, sometimes we might have to settle for patient improvement because it might flare up on us time to time. And sometimes that's because, you know, we're trying to make our bodies eat a certain way and maybe our bodies need something else. That's what I found in some of my food plans, that as I grow older, my body has different needs. And if I get really set in the mindset that I have to only eat this and only this, then sometimes my body starts fighting me. You know, I've had to learn to start listening to my body. And I've had to look into health issues and nutritional plans and see nutritious and find things that worked for me and that I felt good on. And it's just a very complicated thing. I've done a lot of reading lately of some more literature or more news, as you'd say, that is out on eating disorders. And the one thing they found, they've isolated the gene or the way the genes work of the compulsive overeater. And it's the identical gene of the alcoholic, which, you know, which really made sense to me. And they talked about, they broke stuff down. It was just very fascinating. They broke stuff down about chocolate. When you eat chocolate, it just floods your brain with serotonin. Do you know what serotonin is? It's a chemistry, you know, in your, and they identified many foods that flood your brain with serotonin. And so that's one of the problems with chocolate. People who shove so much food in their system that they can't digest it, it ferments into alcohol. And they just, a lot of things just really clear, you know, became clear to me when I read and studied all this information. Anyway, OA back, I think it started in the early 60s. Does anybody here know? The early 60s, Roxanne? Roxanne is still alive. OA started in California, where I'm from. And as I said, it was very powerful. Roxanne actually got this program from Gamblers Anonymous. She went to a GA meeting to support someone else. And, you know, in hearing about the steps, she just thought, well, why couldn't that apply for food? You know, and she started the program of Overeaters Anonymous, and it was a struggle in the beginning. She got fabulous abstinence, and then she lost her abstinence also. And it took her a long time to get it back. And she just did a talk for us in Georgia, and it was a fabulous talk. And she really talked about getting back to basics in OA. What they used to do when I first got abstinent, when I first went to my first meetings, people always qualified. They identified themselves, they said their name, and they qualified their weight loss and or their amount of time in the program. And she really believes that you need to get back to doing that, is qualifying your weight loss. And they also had the food plans weighed and measured. What really happened, what I believe, with OA is when they got rid of the food plans. People come here, and I know it's important to have food plans. I know what happened to me was my wanting to lose the weight really fast. I didn't have a pure motive. And so what happened to me on the gray sheet is I ended up messing up my thyroid. My thyroid stopped working. I stopped having periods. I broke out in a fungus on my back. They couldn't figure out what it was. They didn't think thyroid because I lost all my weight. I was very thin. I was running 10 miles a day. And they finally, after being in the hospital for a while, they tested my thyroid, and they found out that's what it was my thyroid. And that was from being on gray sheet for too long. Aside from going into anorexia, I just screwed up my system. And so a lot of people had similar problems, and so OA basically decided to get rid of the food plans. And a group of people in OA that saw what was happening to OA, because it started kind of falling apart. People started drifting out. Stuff started drifting in. People used to, they started going to a thing called CODA, Codependence No More. Going to inner child workshops, all these things that are probably helpful in other areas, but they don't need to be brought back here into OA. Here we're dealing with food, and people are coming in with teddy bears and dolls and talking about the inner child. And people are coming in not hearing anything about food, you know, so I mean, you could just see the meetings dwindling down. And so there was this group of old-timers that wanted to go back to OA as it originally started. And so they developed a program called OA How. And they went back to weighing and measuring and bringing a food plan back in. Actually, what they brought back in was the gray sheet, but they modified it. And so the first 30 days, you just have fruits, vegetables, one fruit, vegetables, and protein. And then after 30 days, you add in two grains. And then after maintenance, then you add in another fruit. So they modified it so it was healthier. And they went through the steps out of the big book and out of 12 and 12. They did not use the OA literature because in the early days when OA was very successful, they used the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and they changed the words. And so that's what OA How did. They went back to the original days. And it was very successful, and OA How started getting very big in a lot of areas. Now, the other OAers got really, really upset. And there was just like this war going on in the States. And so what happened to OA, why it lost a lot of its I don't want to say power, but a lot of its membership, what really happened to OA that destroyed OA, and OA is getting better now, it's recovering, is that they broke two traditions. They broke the first tradition because of OA Unity. What World Service did is they kicked OA How out and told them they had to go start their own inner group. And the most important thing is for us to stay unified. And you know, every meeting is autonomous. That means self-governing. And so for World Service to come at the level and kick OA How out, you can see how it just kind of started, the movement started deteriorating. And then OA bought property. You know, and that's against one of our traditions too. Alcoholics Anonymous has no property. They don't have any property. Everything we have, we lease. We don't have any property. They bought property and they moved the OA office from California to New Mexico. So it's just like the traditions are being manipulated and how they're getting around it, and they're thinking, I don't know, but you could see the damage in the area where you weren't going. You'd go to a meeting and it just wasn't strong. Nobody knew what they were doing. You weren't seeing recovery. Now they're trying to pull everything back together. They're trying to reunite. They're thinking about bringing food plans back. Now they've got something that's called, I can't remember the name of it, but it's like OA How, but it's unifying it back with regular OA and World Service. So now it's registered with World Service. So now what I see happening in it is that OA is starting to recover again. And I hope I'm explaining some of this stuff to you in hopes that maybe I'll keep this stuff from happening in Iceland. You know, I don't want you, I hope we've made the mistakes for you in the United States, that you don't have to make these mistakes, because it's real hard to stay abstinent without this program and without strength and without abstaining members. Anyway, so I had 14 months of abstinence. I lost my abstinence. I struggled in and out for five years, and then I met that group that took you through the steps. And they told me not to worry about getting abstinent, just do the steps. And I worked the steps according to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous with this group. And this group is one of the groups that really got me into the history, you know, of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's so weird, as I studied the history in the movement of the Oxford group, because, you know, the Oxford group was for everybody, you know, and that's where Alcoholics Anonymous got their steps. It wasn't for alcoholics, it was for everybody, which also helped to encompass overeating and all those things. But anyway, I got into studying the history and getting more excited about that program, and that strengthened my How program. I sponsor a lot of women in OA. I sponsor women in other states. I sponsor this one woman. Her name's Barbara, and she lives in Illinois, and she was 400 pounds, and now she's down to 190. Mm-hmm. And she's just such an inspiration to see her before and after pictures. And that's another thing they used to do in the early days of OA, is they used to have before and after pictures. And so the speaker would stand up here at the podium and they'd qualify their weight loss and they'd pass out before and after pictures. And that was in maybe the first 5 years of OA that I was in it, and I never see that anymore. Nowhere in the United States do I see that happening anymore. So weighing and measuring is a very useful tool. One thing about OA How is that they believe that you even need to weigh and measure at a restaurant. And I just have to tell you, I believe that somehow you're going to have to let God control this deal a little bit, because it's very hard to take your food, all your scales, all your measuring cups to Iceland. You know, it's very hard. And to have two cups of salad at lunch and two cups of salad at dinner in Iceland, is very difficult. So you know, I've just kind of had to just let God on this trip. I've just had to kind of just let God just take care of me. And I just, you know, I ask just not to overeat. You know, I just don't want to overeat. I don't want to feel like I'm binging, but I want to be able to come here and because I've made myself crazy with trying to abstain. I was doing OA How Again, maybe a year ago. I was at a conference, and it was just, I was just like a crazy woman because I was trying to eat exactly what I was supposed to eat, and I could have a baked potato, and I could have rice, but I can't have sugar in the rice or anything else in the rice. And so I get to this hotel where we're staying, and I've got my breakfast that I took with me and my lunch. And anyway, for dinner, I was going to eat with everyone else, and they have no baked potatoes. And then they have rice, and it has all kinds of raisins and all this other stuff in it. And then, I mean, there was nothing there I could eat. And I went up to my room, and I was just like a crazy woman. And my husband said, he said, "You know what you remind me of?" And I said, "No, what?" And he says, "You remind me of what I used to be like when I was trying to get a drink." You know, that was really powerful. You know, it was really powerful. And he says, "Where's God in all this?" You know, it's so, like, so I know for me, I need to call my food into a sponsor, be accountable when I can, write it down, and do what I can do. But there's going to come a time where I'm just going to have to be able to pull God in this and be able to be okay. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to come to places like Iceland. I'm just not going to be able to do it. First of all, it just makes me too crazy, and it's too hard. It's just too hard. And I just know either God is everything or else he is nothing. And that God can be brought into your food. And sometimes I might eat something that's inappropriate by accident, and I'll be okay. It doesn't have to set me off as long as my motives are pure and I ask God to help me with it. So it's been a learning process. It's especially been a learning process for me since I moved to Georgia. Going into menopause, having all these surgeries, trying to figure out what my body needs, what my body doesn't need. And then this traveling. It's very hard to abstain while you're traveling. But I feel like I'm back on the road of recovery in this program. But the one thing I can tell you is that I've never, ever left. I've never left OA. I've watched it in its good times and its bad times. I've had my good times and my bad times. And I just know this is the only thing that works. I know so many people have had staples in their stomach and had their jaws wired. And I myself did diet pills for... I did diet pills for 17 years. In fact, my food addiction started as a little kid, and I always shoved food in my mouth. I never took a drink of alcohol till I was 25 years old because I knew I never wanted to be an alcoholic like my mom. So, I mean, I just ate. I ate, and I was very obese at 15, and then I discovered the wonderful world of diet pills. And that's back in the days when doctors gave really good amphetamines, you know, methadrine, dexedrine. So I went on that diet for 16 years, and... what really happened to me, and I don't share this in my AA talk, I share a lot more stuff in OA than I do in AA because you just can't. You know, there's no way I can share my OA story without telling the truth about my drinking. I cannot not talk about alcohol. And I can't share my AA talk without letting people know that, you know, I had a problem with food. So I always share it, but I don't talk like I do at length here. But what happened to me, I was always trying to get off the diet pills. And after I'd kick because I was addicted to them. I'd kick and it would be a real hard withdrawal. I'd swear I'd never do that again. I'd gain 20 pounds in 2 days. Now, a lot of people say that's impossible. I'm telling you, you get a 35-pound bag of groceries and you put it all in your stomach and get on the scale. And you're going to weigh a whole lot more until you get rid of it. And so I could do that. I'd put on 20 pounds in 2 days, and I would get in the shower, and it would just be hitting me so... I mean, it just hurt so bad because you're all swollen from all that salt and everything. It would hurt so bad that within a couple of days, I'd be back on the diet pills. You know, I just couldn't stand that fat. I just couldn't stand it. And so I did that dance for a while, and finally I was trying to surrender, and I had this huge spiritual experience, and I hadn't taken a drink yet. And I remember being on the floor and just sobbing for God to help me with my food addiction and my diet pill addiction. And I really didn't even believe in God. So So this is where I really came to believe. I was sobbing at something to help me with it. And I was being evicted from my apartment. My utilities were turned out off. This is what always happened to me. Any little penny I got, I lived on welfare. Every little penny I got, I used on diet pills or food. And so my daughter was really suffering. And that's really what I was crying about, is how I was affecting my daughter. Anyway, this force just started to pull my chin up. And I couldn't keep my chin down. And by the time my eyes came up, I was looking at a bookcase that was across the room. I mean, it was far across the room. And this book, there was a book in this room, and it had been my mom's book. I don't even know what it was doing in my stuff. But it had been my mom's book. And through my tears, I could see it. It was like big letters coming off the book at my face. And it said, "Change your life through prayer." And so I went over and I looked at that book as it came off the shelf, and I started reading it. And it said all this stuff about God, and I'd throw that book, then I'd read it a little bit more, and I'd throw that book, and I'd read a little bit more. And so finally, what really happened is I just came to believe, you know, from reading this book, I came to believe that God could help me with this problem. So I went to this church, and I told the minister all about my food addiction, my compulsive overeating, and my diet pill addiction, and shared with him everything, you know, things I had to do to live. And this minister assured me if I got really active in this church and I read all these inspirational books, I did all this positive thinking, all these affirmations, that I could be everything that I ever wanted to be. After I got to the program in AA, I heard a speaker say, he used the word alcoholic, but he said, if you're alcoholic, you cannot think your way into right actions. He said, if you're alcoholic, you have to act your way into right thinking. So I just switched that around to overeating. And because that's what I was at that time. I was a compulsive overeater and a diet pill addict. And so I got really active in that church. I even became the secretary of that church. And I did all this positive thinking. I'd always think positive. I'd write down these long affirmations and put them in my Bible and stuff like that. And so what resulted is that experience, I ended up having a torrid affair with the minister, and it upset his wife. And then I stole the church money for my food and for my amphetamines. And I'm telling you, that was a hopeless feeling. And because of that, I couldn't stand to feel that way one more day. Ended up being kicked out of the church. I picked up a drink. But I didn't know I was picking up a drink to drown my troubles. I just know everyone in the church didn't drink like my mom. You know, they did not drink like my mom. They were social drinkers. And so I just picked up that drink, and I stayed drunk for 5 or 6 years. I mean, literally stayed drunk. And I'm so thankful, because that's what got me into the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Is I first had to give up the alcohol, kind of in reverse. First it was food, then it was the amphetamines, then it was the alcohol. But I had to do it backwards to get in recovery. So I had to first give up the alcohol, went to AA. 3 months in AA, you couldn't talk about drugs in AA meetings back then. We had this old timer, he'd jump up and say, if you've got a problem with drugs, go to NA. And so what that really did for those first 3 months is that allowed me to keep taking diet pills. It did. And so I didn't even really realize that I had a problem with them. I did realize it, but I didn't think NA was the place for me, because, you know, I thought heroin addicts, people who shoot up and all that stuff. So anyway, 3 months after I quit drinking, I went to NA, got off the diet pills. But, you know, after I was in NA for a while, I just knew I didn't belong there. I mean, they were still walking that walk, talking that talk, at least the meetings I went to. I'm not putting NA down, honest. They were walking that walk, talking that talk. They just weren't using, you know. And I just knew, for me, I had to apply these principles in all my affairs. I had to get rid of all those old ideas. So I left NA, and I knew one thing is I really didn't need it, because I didn't take those drugs for any other reason than my weight. But I didn't leave NA until I got into Overeaters Anonymous. I was 6 months sober when I walked into my first OA meeting, and I just knew that's where I belonged. You know, that I belonged there. And that's when I was able to give up NA, because I knew that had everything to do with being an OA. And once I got into Overeaters Anonymous, I've never thought ever of taking another diet pill. I know this is where the answer is. And I've seen many people in and out of this program trying an easier, softer way. You know, and there is no easier, softer way. This is the last house on the block. You know, it is the last house on the block, and there's no easier, softer way. And trying some of those drastic measures You could die. You're taking your life in your hand. And if any of you are struggling with your food, all I can say is just don't give up. I mean, you're not a failure unless you quit trying. So just keep showing up, keep suiting up. Try to use those tools of writing your food down, calling it in, making 3 or 4 OA calls a day, and go to as many meetings, OA meetings, as you can go to. Start working your steps. You know, even if you're not abstaining, start working your steps and see what happens. I mean, you might be catapulted into that fourth dimension of existence. Thank you.